To begin with, the Vatican only came into existence in 1929, okay? The contracts that our country has are with the Holy See. Okay? Prior to 1929, the Vatican didn't exist, period, okay? It was a new development, a new way of structuring things, and it basically is a property management organization for the Holy See. And that's why when you saw Pope Benedict step down, he kept his ministerial office. That means he kept his holy office, he kept his sacred office, okay? So what does that leave? That leaves Francis in the position of being the pontiff and trying to sort out all the business end of things, okay? I mean, it's 100% fraud from there on in. It's just a story of employees bilking their employers under the table. And it's really quite horrendous. And they're doing this with the full knowledge of the Queen and the Pope, who are the actual international trustees that are supposed to be riding herd. And that's why I went to the Queen, and that's why I went to the Pope.
Most of my listeners have heard of the amazing antioxidant and immunity building benefits of C60, but what you may not know is how amazing black seed oil is as a carrier for C60. Black seed oil has been called the miracle herb by the National Health Institute because of all the health benefits, such as anti-inflammatory, anti-diabetic, and so much more. That is why I personally take the ultra pure 99.99% C60 in black seed oil. It's now available in gel caps, so no more slurping down that disgusting oil. Listeners can get Live Longer Labs' patented Ultra Pure No Solvent C60 at exclusive discounted prices now at my shop. Go to sarahwestell.com under shop and learn more. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, I have Anna von Reitz returning to the program. And she's going to be talking about the structure of the United States, what we really are, how we are controlled by the British Crown, by the Pope, what the difference is between the Vatican, which the Pope runs, and the Holy See. I think you will be blown away at some of this information that's coming out about that structure and who's really running the Holy See and how Pope Francis connects into this. And, I'm not going to pretend to completely understand this. I'm not even going to pretend. And I hope that bringing these people to you will help you understand. I think there's enough out there to me that says there's something here. There's too many really intelligent people that are telling me that this is messed up and that we need to fix it. And so that's why I keep talking to people. I ask her some pretty direct questions about her involvement with the Vatican and what that means, and she answers it. And I actually learned a lot from that part, and I hope you do too. And she did an exclusive Patreon interview for me last time she was on, so I'm going to repost that so people can get to that on my Patreon. I have the link below for Patreons. I also have included a couple more discounts that are just for Patreons. One is for the Tetragen, and Tetragen is awesome. It takes a while for your hormones to balance, but once it does, there's a lot of fat burn that goes on. For my patrons, I have a layout of how it works and so forth with that discount. If there are any hosts out there, independent journalists doing amazing, honest work with integrity, I'd be willing to talk to you about also selling Tetragen. I think I'm the only one right now, and I'll help you get that set up. It's not a multi-level system, one of those pyramid. It is not one of those, but I will help you get set up on that. I think I'm the only one selling it. So it's a great opportunity for independent journalists that are struggling to have an income stream to get something that is good. It's a win-win for everybody as far as I'm concerned, because it has a 60-day or 90-day money-back guarantee. So you get the time to see if it's going to work for you. And if it doesn't, then you can get your money back. But if you take it all the time and you follow some basic principles, it's awesome. For me, it is. But anyways, and then I also have with the snake oil, I have a discount for that. Snake oil is amazing because I did a study on my own vehicle, and we took pictures, everything else, and we show consistently a 10% miles per gallon reduction. And so that pays for the cost of the product. And then because it reduces significant friction, it's a thing that you put, it's a compound you put in your oil and your transmission fluid and all these other places in your vehicle, and it reduces friction. So not only do you get better gas mileage, you also reduce maintenance costs. And I've yet to see that, obviously. You don't know how much you're saving because you don't know what maintenance you're not going to have. But that is a discount I have for my Patreons too. Actually, if you buy it, you can get some free for gifts for others, and it starts at $29. It's a no-brainer because the cost of the product's paid for by the savings in your gasoline, and it doesn't void any warranty or anything. It's just a great product. So go to my Patreon and you can get that. And again, I'll have Anna von Reitz's contact information below. She's going to give us a diagram, which we talk about in the show, which I have a link to that. I'm trying to get a link to that. So as soon as I have that, I'll have that below as well. And again, I'm going to repost the exclusive interview I did with her on my Patreon. And this is a two-parter because I went long. And so I turn it into a two-parter again. Whenever it goes over an hour, I turn it into a two-parter. So look for both pieces of this. And let's get into my interview now with Anna von Reitz. Anna, thank you so much for rejoining the program.
Well, thank you for putting up with me.
You're not too hard to put up with.
I totally messed up last week. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no problem. That happens. We had the wrong Skype IDs and stuff, and no big deal. Okay, let me ask you. I've been talking, there's lots of people. I've done a lot of shows on this topic as far as our country not being structured the way we think. And, you know, to me, it's just one big fraud, and I don't understand how it could be under a fraud. It just, the whole thing is so confusing to me. But one thing is that all these different groups, and, you know, believe me, I get, you know, bombarded with different people telling me about this stuff. They all claim the other ones don't know what they're talking about. And so to me, that sounds like disinfo and intelligence operation. Also, I don't know, but how can there be so many people who are so convinced this is right, and but everybody else is wrong? How does that work? What's going on in this space?
It's that old story about the, you know, the 10 blind men feeling the elephant, and one has hold of the tail and he says, oh, it's rope-like. And another one has hold of the leg and he says, no, it's like a tree. You know, it's the same exact thing where everybody's got a piece of it, but they make the mistake of thinking they've got all of it. And that you have to step back far enough so that you can see the whole animal.
The other question that I get asked, you know, who are people affiliated with and so forth. One thing is the Vatican doesn't have a lot of trust of a lot of people, you know, namely because of the sexual scandal, that they have not done their part to get rid of, to eradicate. In fact, people believe that they're involved in it because of the fact that they covered it up and didn't eradicate it. I mean, they just did so much bad actors. And then there's all these other reasons to not trust them, you know, based on information and intel that has come out over the years. There is people that are telling me that you're affiliated with the Vatican. Are you, and what does that mean?
Okay, to begin with, the Vatican only came into existence in 1929, okay? The contracts that our country has are with the Holy See. Not the Vatican. Okay? Two different things.
Well, okay. So what's the difference? Yeah, what is the difference? Because people always refer to what the Pope is running as the Vatican versus the Holy See. So if you can explain, and like, you know, the Church of England, when they broke off from Rome, they didn't break off from the Vatican. They broke off for something else. Can you explain that?
Okay. Prior to 1929, the Vatican didn't exist. Period. Okay. It was a new development, a new way of structuring things, and it basically is a property management organization for the Holy See. Now, problem being that the church has always had a bifurcated leadership. When you're talking about the Church of Rome, you're talking about an organization that was basically a merger of pagan Rome with Christianity, which happened at the Council of Nicaea and you know, Emperor Constantine and all of that. And you've had two heads of state combined there. You've had the pontiff in charge of the secular church of Rome. They call it a secular church. I don't know why they love oxymorons so much, but they call it a secular church. And it's a pagan institution running in tandem with the Christian side of it, which is, you know, the church that we all think of.
Let me clarify. So basically, when back in the day when they created this, they never really merged. They just set it up as a side-by-side organization.
Basically. I mean, they communicate back and forth. They have business in common, all these other things in common. It's more like, if you know, wearing two hats. You know, all of a sudden I'm going to wear my papal tiara, right? So now I'm acting as the Roman pontiff. But if I turn around and I wear a different hat or no hat at all, well, I'm operating in a different capacity. And that's why when you saw Pope Benedict step down, he kept his ministerial office. That means he kept his holy office. He kept his sacred office. Okay? So what does that leave? That leaves Francis in the position of being the pontiff and trying to sort out all the business end of things. Okay?
So is Benedict now still in charge of the Holy See?
As far as I know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the thing is, our business was with the Holy See. We don't have any contracts with the Vatican. So, you know, we complain that the Holy See has not acted in accordance with its contracts with us. It's acted in breach of trust. And we bring forward all the information. And the Pope says, oh my, you're right. This isn't, you know, this isn't going according to plan here. This is not something I knew about. And he begins making the effort to correct. So I begin giving notice to his employees for him that they're doing it wrong, right? Just as you'd have any kind of organization or corporation. The head guy realizes, oh, we're doing this wrong. And he turns to someone and says, will you help me get the word out? And of course, I said, yes. So that's what I did. I went forward throughout the world and told all of his employees that, hey, you're doing this wrong. I gave them notice and due process that they were operating in an incorrect manner and under incorrect assumptions. And so that's what I did for Pope Benedict.
You did it for...
And that was a private thing that was just...
You did it for Benedict, not Francis.
Right. And it was a private thing. It was not a... It wasn't a job. He didn't pay me. It was more like a mission. It was like, you know, where two people are trying to address a problem. And he was making a good faith effort, so far as I could ever tell, to address the problems that were brought forward and to honor the commitments of the Holy See to America and to Americans.
Okay, so, now, why would he do that? Because I want to back that up now and say what there's an according to this, what you have going on, there's an ongoing fleecing, if you will, of the American people. And so I want to understand what this fleecing is, who's behind it, and then why would the Holy See work with us to get out from under it?
Well, it's their obligation. They're supposed to be the trustees that are in charge of the municipal government. And most of our trouble is coming from the municipal government in Washington, D.C. The municipal government is formed under the Constitution at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. And all it was meant to do was establish a separate city government for the municipality of Washington, D.C., as a neutral meeting ground for the states and for other nations to come and have a peaceful kind of sacred space or neutral ground, an even playing field area where they could all safely interact. And that's what the mission was. And that's why that clause extends to Congress, the government of Washington, D.C. Now, here's the problem. That charter was extended by the Holy See, and it made Washington, D.C. subject to them. It's a international city-state, and it's organized under the municipality of Rome, okay? So what we've got is a foreign entity there operating as our capital city, and the Congress was given, entrusted, I should say, to act as a separate government for that international city-state. And it says right there in the Constitution, it's a plenary oligarchy, which means that they can do whatever they want as the government of Washington, D.C.
So now how does this relate? I still want to get back to how we're being fleeced, who's doing it, how that changed from what we thought of the American Revolution, that we are an independent country, and why the Roman See is even, Holy See is even helping us. But so how did we get to this point where Washington, D.C. is under the Roman See and Holy See and not an independent, you know, what happened after the Revolutionary War where we all think the United States is this independent sovereign country?
Actually, what you've got are 50 nations, 50 separate countries, and they're all joined together in various kinds of associations. You have three basic associations. One is the Union that was created by the Unanimous Declaration of Independence, as we all know, published July 4, 1776. Then they joined together as a federation of states, and that was set up on September 9th, 1776, only a few months later. And then still during the Revolution, okay, this is all happening during the Revolutionary War. In 1781, March 1st, 1781, they formed a confederation of states and chartered it as the States of America. Now, this is the one that we don't know much about. This is what we've never been taught. We've seen the Articles of Confederation, but then we've been told that the Constitution's replaced that. That isn't true. There's absolutely no action in Congress ever repealing or changing or even amending the Articles of Confederation. Instead, what happened is that the Constitutions were adopted, and the Confederation, the Federation, and the Union continued to function right up until 1860. And it was at 1860 that the Confederation broke apart into the Northern Confederation and the Southern Confederation. The part that's obscured from us is the Northern Confederation. We are taught to think of the North as being the Union states, right? And the South being the secessionist Confederate States of America. But actually, they were both members, both sides were members of the Confederation formed under the Articles of Confederation. So what you're talking about are business entities. You're talking about basically commercial corporations that were chartered by the individual states that were fighting each other in a mercenary conflict. That's why it's a civil war instead of a war. Okay? It's an intergovernmental fight between incorporated entities. It would be like GM, GE, and Westinghouse fighting, literally fighting with, yeah, okay, so that's what happened. And at the end of the Civil War, the North was bankrupt and the South was what they call ruinated. So the entire Confederation was wiped out at that point. And the Federation of States, the actual states that we think of that are physically defined, the Federation was never involved in any of this. There was no declaration of war. There was no treaty of peace. This was just a mercenary conflict. The entire quote-unquote Civil War wasn't a war. And so...
Okay, well then what happened? I mean, go ahead.
Well, it was a combination of greed, guile, and cluelessness on the part of the American people, I suppose somewhat, the circumstance being at the end of a long struggle like that and not having the best communications. All of this took place where basically the Union Army was in charge. They were put in charge by Lincoln in 1863 when the Northern State of States Confederate members went bankrupt. And they remained in power in Washington, D.C. as a military government under Grant, as you will recall. So what we had was essentially a military protectorate. All right. And the military has always been substantially under the territorial government. So the military, acting as the territorial entity, took over. And the only other government was the quote unquote civil government, the municipal government of Washington, D.C. So think of it as the military being territorial and the federal civil service being municipal. They're both our employees, right? But so these two groups of employees are in power. And the actual states and people are left out of the loop. They're not really told what's going on. Instead, the people that we elected at that time in good faith as members of Congress put on their municipal hat and acted as the civilian government. They acted in our place. And if you start looking at the language, you'll see that's when they were representing us.
Well, okay, so from a practical standpoint, do we not have a government that represents us? I mean, we don't have a government at this point, or we do, and it's just sitting there dormant.
It's been dormant. It's been dormant. Always remember that the legitimate, actual, factual government of this entire country is vested in the people, in living people. It's a living government. Of the people, for the people, by the people. And if it weren't, it would be of the person, by the person, for the person, okay? But no, it's vested in us, in each one of us. And so it's been dormant because we've been kept ignorant.
On purpose.
I mean, you probably...
It's on purpose, right?
On purpose.
Okay, well, I think that's a, yes. I think that's a fraud, but... Who is then owns the corporations that's running this corporation? And, you know, because our government is dormant, so we're being run by a corporation. Who owns that corporation?
Well, there are actually two corporations, and they're both being operated offshore. And we are supposedly the stockholders and whatnot, but this is all fraud. I mean, it's 100% fraud from there on in. It's just a story of employees bilking their employers under the table. And it's really quite horrendous. And they're doing this with the full knowledge of the Queen and the Pope, who are the actual international trustees that are supposed to be riding herd. And that's why I went to the Queen, and that's why I went to the Pope.
Okay, so the Pope and the Holy See are two separate entities.
They're supposed to be managed.
So the Queen...
Yeah, he's an individual.
Yeah. Okay, so the Queen and the Pope, which is the Vatican, are fleecing us. Now, in practical terms, what does that mean? How are we being fleeced in a way that an average citizen can understand?
Well, we're being taxed without representation for starts. We're being mischaracterized as British territorial citizens, which we're not. And then we're being further mischaracterized as municipal citizens, which we're not either. And at each stage, we accrue more responsibilities and more taxation and more regulation and more denigration of our rights and everything else.
Can I do some examples? Like, are some of our taxes going to the Vatican and the Queen without our knowledge? Huge amounts.
Absolutely. Huge. Absolutely.
Okay. So one thing is, the one fleecing is a significant number of our dollars are not staying in the United States, are going to investments that would help us. It goes to foreigners, the Pope, or the Vatican, and the Queen, correct? And what are they doing with that money? Do they use it against us?
Well, in some parts, they just use it for their own purposes, you know, whatever their purposes are. They use us as gun fodder, and they use us as assets. That they use us as collateral for their debts, you know, basically. And they use us as labor.
And are the intelligence agencies and our government, or I'm sorry, are the intelligence agencies and our military ultimately being directed by them, or is our military an independent entity that really is directed by our generals and our president? Who directs our military?
It's a matter of compartmentalization. The only way that this machine works is if people are kept in their own little box and never look outside it. And so the military, all but maybe a handful at the very top of the military ever really come to grips with the fact that the Queen controls the Navy on the high seas and navigable inland waterways, for example. They're just pieces of information that you don't get unless you study history.
Okay, so why do we have to follow them if only four people know about it? Why don't we just say hell with the Queen and do what the majority of the people think it is anyways? Why don't we just become what we think it is and say hell with all you guys? Who's actually has the power to say, no, you have to follow it this way, if the majority of the people already think a certain way?
Well, what has to happen, Sarah, to do it lawfully and peacefully is for us to act as individual living people, right? And to restore our government by assembling our states of the union, right? The federation. The federation is the source of all the delegated powers. Everything that was delegated in the constitutions came from where? Ah, from the federation. So we bring our states together. We act as states, as the parties to enforce the constitutions and to bring our trustees to bear on how this needs to operate for our own sakes.
Okay, so that would be how we do it legally, structurally. But for people to understand that the money, because to me, if masses of money are not staying in this country, that's one of the biggest issues. And our rights is another one, which we could talk about. Is there a way for an average citizen to be able to look and see that the tax money is not staying in this country? Is there an overall way that the President of the United States, Congress, people who are business leaders and understand money can go in and go, oh my God, a serious chunk of our money is leaving and going to the Vatican and the Queen? Is there any way to track that?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How?
In fact, we've done quite a few studies on all that. Well, first and foremost, by using us as hypothecated debt receivers. They actually list us on Dun & Bradstreet and on various other and on exchanges. We're all over the place as commodities. We're being bought and sold. When we're babies in our cradles, they seize upon us as an asset, and they misidentify us as British territorial citizens, as if we were born in Puerto Rico.
Okay, and I've heard all that before, but our tax money that they're collecting yearly, that's huge amounts of money. Is there a way to track not just us as assets, because that's a whole other issue, tracking the tax money being funneled out of this country to the Vatican and to the Queen?
Yeah, but that's part and parcel of us being labor assets. You're talking about income tax, right?
I'm talking the IRS taking our tax money, and where does that go? Except, supposedly we have a budget, a government budget, which they claim is all the tax revenues that come in. And if it's not, what is the total tax revenues that are coming in, and where is it going? Do you know what I mean? It's just a budget for that this corporation, if you will. And if that IRS overall budget revenues coming in isn't accurate, why isn't it? How do we figure out what it really is and where that money is funneling to?
Well, as the Grace Commission showed in 1980, all of the money that's being collected as internal revenue tax is going to service the interest on the debt. Okay. And basically, if you want to look at it in banking terms or financial terms, all it's doing is it's removing money from the market. It's removing script from the market. So it's acting as like a pressure valve on a tea kettle, you know. So it's not really being exercised in the way that people think it's being exercised. It's not going to pay for services. We're still back in the 1920s. We still think that this is money, and we still think that this is paying for government services, and it's not. It's just being used as a measure to moderate the flow and the amount of fiat currency in the system.
And where does that debt interest payments go to? Does it go to the owners of the Federal Reserve?
Well, it gets offset against the amounts of free capital or free currency in the system through the Federal Reserve. But you have to understand that what the Federal Reserve does is it acts as a broker. It issues these promissory notes, but then those promissory notes are backed by Treasury bonds. And it's the bonds that then obligate us as collateral for the debt.
Okay. And so getting us out of being collateral is we shouldn't be debt instruments, and we are, is essentially the scenario. Now, how, in a practical term, when we're talking about our court systems, are we seeing it on a daily basis where our court systems aren't just, you know, they aren't working in our best interest? Or what are we seeing from a practical, everyday level? Not just we're losing our rights and everything else, but what specifically are we seeing that can tell to a person that, you know, because we could be losing our rights because we have a bunch of communist lefty people in here making rules that say that we're going to lose it. So that doesn't necessarily teach us that this is what's behind it. And so I want to understand and hear something that teaches us that this is really behind it, not that we're losing our rights, because we could be losing our rights for many reasons. This could be the reason why, but there could also be other reasons. You know what I mean? What can we get an examples, few examples of what in a practical sense are we seeing? Maybe that the Congress never passes and I've seen studies on this, they never pass a law that represents what the people want. They always go with what they want, and it across the board.
That's because they're a plenary oligarchy and they're doing whatever they please. They're claiming to represent us, though in fact they don't.
Do they understand it? Do they know that they're
I
doing
don't know.
this?
I don't know how many of them do, but certainly some of them do. Some of them have to know how to wear those different hats. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the situation we've got. The military is obeying the civil government instead of the civilian government because the civilian government hasn't gotten off its butt and assembled the states of the Union in 150 years. That's what we're doing now. We're getting all of this sorted out, and we're putting aside all of the lies that they've told about us, because they have told a lot of lies and created a bunch of falsified records to justify what they've been doing. But the short answer, Sarah, is that the courts are not our courts. Just like they're our employees, they're not our government. The reason that everything seems so backwards is because it is. The employees have been telling the employers what to do and how to do it, instead of the employers telling the employees what to do and how to do it.
And we're the employers, essentially.
We are the employers, okay? But we haven't been doing our job. As a result, our employees are coming in and taking over and telling us how to live and what to do.
So now, why would the Holy See be helping us and
Right.
the Pope cooperate? Because the Pope is benefiting, and so is the Queen. So the Queen and the Pope would not want to help the Holy See, I would think. So what's going on there politically, and why would the Holy See help us?